Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, episode 53 for January 24th, 2009. Fog. This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free, libre, and open source software, the best kind of software, with Mr. Randall Schwartz of Stonehenge.com. Every week, in fact, it has been every week, we get to talk to somebody interesting in an interesting open source project. Hey, Randall, how you doing?
Hey, Leo, good to talk to you again. And actually, just speaking about that, almost been every week, you know, now that you've put up the wonderful wiki for Floss Weekly on the
it's wiki.twit.tv.
I knew you'd know that better than I would. Okay, I've actually went back and noticed that I did 27 Floss Weekly shows in 2008. That is better than every other week. So we are up to more than half time now, which is incredible. And I can say probably the only ones that we didn't do are because I was out on a cruise or you were out doing something. But we were, that's quite a few shows in 1 year.
Well, and I think you're really on a pace to do more than that. We haven't missed a week in some time. But, those cruises take some of the time out of your schedule.
It's a little hard when there's an 800 millisecond ping time to the ship to actually do one of these calls. So,
yeah, ship internet is not good internet. Not only expensive, it's not good. The quality of it is not great.
Yeah, although the show a couple of weeks ago, where unfortunately I was on about a 1 second delay for some reason, didn't help out real well.
All better now. You're
okay. Yes, coming in clean now.
5x5, as they are.
Comcast is being happy to me today, baby. For some reason. Yay!
When's your next cruise?
My next cruise is, in fact, coming up in about 6 weeks, I think it is.
Do you go through, withdrawal if you're on a cruise every few weeks?
Oh, there was 6 months last year when I didn't get to go out to sea, and that was so annoying. I was like, I thought about just renting a little boat on the lake out here just so I could get some water time.
You're like an avid sailor, except you've got to have 5 meals a day and a lovely jacuzzi tub in the room.
And oddly enough, I can't swim, and I'm afraid of the water, so go figure.
You can't swim?
No, I'm much better sinking than I am swimming.
I saw Sal Segoyan of the Great Apple Script team. His new book is out, by the way, Apple Script 123, 10 years in the making, finally. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And Sal was on the cruise to the Mediterranean cruise that you were just on. And he said, because normally we go on Holland America. I guess this one was on Costas. And it's an Italian crew instead of a Dutch crew. He said the big difference is the Italians are a little bit more laid back. Mm-hmm. He said, for instance, the lifeboat drill. Now, the Dutch, you show up, you'll be under your boat, and they take attendance. And if you are not there, you have to come back and do it later. Yeah, apparently the Italians, everybody congregated in the bar with their life jackets on.
It's true. Well, I stayed in my room because I've learned that trick. If you just stay in your room, even during the lifeboat drill, they don't actually
Randall,
come find
you. You can't swim. You're the one who should be at the lifeboat drill.
I've been on 15 lifeboat drills, then I stopped doing them. Right. This would be my 49th cruise coming up or something, so it really doesn't matter anymore.
Check where your boat is so you know where to go.
Yes, exactly. And also the important thing is that coming up on this upcoming cruise, I will finally have 300 Holland America Sea Days. This puts me in the special category where I get a giant, I think it's plutonium medallion to wear.
You're a master
close
mariner.
In the dark.
You know what it means, really?
What?
More junk mail.
It probably does. Not only that, but I'll be the only one with my own hair color on that group. So it'll be really funny. It'll be kind of fun.
The master mariner.
Looking forward to that.
All right. Today we're going to talk about fog.
That's right.
This I am really interested in. We're all used to Norton Ghost and other disk imaging solutions. They cost a lot of money, but they're very useful. They're very handy. You don't have to, though. There's an open source solution.
Indeed. And the again, this is one of the projects that approached me about being on the show. And I love that. If you happen to have a project out there and you're listening to this show, go to twit.tv/floss and there'll be the contact information there for that. And we'll get into more about that at the end of the show as well. But I want to tell you, this is Chuck Sapirsky, and I'm mispronouncing this. We'll have to ask him to pronounce it correctly. Yin Zhang.
Not even close
to that.
Jian Zhang.
No, really?
Yeah, Jian Zhang.
Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see.
I was a Chinese major. That's my best guess. The problem is, of course, we're not looking at the ideograms. We're looking at an anglicization of it.
Exactly. Well, anyway.
But
so
normally that would be Jian Zhang.
Okay, there we go. And these guys are the leaders of the FOG project, which is, I think, started its name as Free Ghost. So it was a ghosting software, but it's open source software. And from what I understand, it allows you to define a series of machines and say, when the next time this thing reboots, go ahead and load in this particular image for me and manage it on a sort of a regional scale or a large scale. So this would be great for, say, from what I understand from reading the documentation, it's from like if you have a cluster of machines for a business or a school, and you wanted to make sure that every reboot every morning they all had the same exact software or different sets of common software, this would be the way to take care of that. And I'm really looking forward to hearing how this is all put together.
I can't wait either. I mean, this is a very useful. There are only three tools that people need but are costly. One is a disk partitioner, one is a disk imager, and one is a disk recovery tool. And I love seeing these open source ones. Steve, mm-hmm. Steve Gibson may not like it so much, but I love seeing him. Let's get Chuck Sapirsky and Jian Zhang on the line right now and talk to him about FOG.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess Chuck gets the credit for coming up with the idea of doing a clone of the cloner.
Actually, it was both of us, but yep.
How did that happen? Tell us how it happened.
Basically, we were just looking for a cheap solution that could replace systems like Semantic Ghost and the like, but we wanted to do more. We wanted to not, carry around CDs or boot disks or anything like that. So we tried a couple different options and ended up settling on a Linux-based solution.
It's not a Windows program that we're talking here.
It clones Windows, but it runs actually the back end, all the server and database runs on Linux.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. I mean, if you run Ghost, Norton Ghost, it still brings you out to DOS.
Yep.
Although there are some cloners like Cronus TrueImage and Disk Drive Snapshot that do it from within Windows. I don't even know how they can manage that, but it makes sense to go out to exit out of Windows to do a good clone.
Yeah, we actually just found that all the tools were there to do it with Linux to make things a lot easier for us. So that's why we ended up going with Linux over Windows.
I've actually heard of people doing Linux clones using command line tools that are already on Linux.
You can use things like DD.
And
what we really do is we really just tie together a bunch of those open source tools. We actually, for the majority of our images, use part image, which is a Linux-based partition cloning program. But we extend it by doing partition resizing and things like that nature. We throw multicasting on top of it, and we kind of do all the storage back end stuff too, like storing it on the server, keeping the host registered in the FOG database, and things like that.
Well, there's a lot more going on than the ghosts.
Yep, you could say that.
So why don't you give us sort of an overview of it? I mean, for people at home, I made this sort of horrible description at the beginning of the show, but maybe you could kind of elaborate as to who would use FOG and why.
Well, basically what FOG does is you take a clean installation of, say, Windows XP with all the software you want on it, your antivirus, all your updates, and then you can upload that image to the FOG server where it can then be deployed to X amount of computers. You can either unicast it, which means sending it just directly to one computer, or you can multicast it to 30 computers at one time.
Now, there's some specialization that you do when you install Windows on a particular machine, though, like the super user password or whatever the equivalent is on Windows and things like that. Does that specialization get stripped on the way up to the central server?
Actually, it doesn't. Things like host name and stuff like that, we change after the fact. So when we push the image back down to the client, we do some specialization to the Windows machine then.
So you could, as a system administrator for, say, 20 machines, have one standard machine that you would use as sort of the source, and then have what configuration scripts that run on each machine as it's deployed?
Yeah, that's pretty much how it works. You can run things that change, like I said, the host name. Then we can do snap-in. So you could even install software on top of your image. So you could install, like, on if certain computers have a certain suite of software you need, you can even do that after the fact also.
So this would be for something like maybe a small business administration, or maybe a network of, you know, 20 or 200 or 2,000. What's the scaling point for this? Where would this start not making sense anymore?
We've heard of people going all the way up into the tens of thousands of computers. We have districts that are geographically spread that actually go into the tens of thousands without any issue.
I mean, yeah, this is, I mean, that's what people use Ghost for, right? I mean, the whole idea of Ghost is kind of massive unintended installs.
Yep.
IT departments have been using these for years. So you had already written a PC tool before this. I presume it's a PC tool, just from the name. PC Safe POS? Oh, PC... No. Oh, see, I misread it. It's PS Cafe POS.
Yep. That was actually the first open source project that I did. And it really doesn't have much to do with Fog, but it's just an open source educational tool for a POS for like lunchrooms.
Oh, lunchroom point of sale. That's cool. Were you a kid when you made that up?
Actually, I was a college project.
Oh, that's
I did that
cool.
while I was in college. Yeah.
That's cool. And how did you meet John?
We worked together. Actually, I ended up working for the high school that I attended. And then me and Jim worked together ever since I started at the high school, and we just worked very well together.
Kind of like Welcome Back, Cotter.
Yep, exactly.
So how do you divide up the chores here on this? Did you both work on it together, or did you take different parts of the project?
Majority's all chalk.
I do a lot of the coding, but Jim comes up with a lot of the good ideas, and we basically just collaborate on everything. Jim will do some coding sometimes, and a lot of the logistics and stuff, we just kind of bounce ideas off each other, trying to figure out the best way to do things.
What was the biggest challenge in putting this together?
You know, the biggest challenge was probably just doing the actual Pixie booting, making a Linux image that's small enough that it can fit in memory on most client computers.
That didn't exist? You had to write that from scratch?
Well, we actually based it on Fedora Core 6, actually. And we basically, we work backwards. Instead of doing like a Linux from scratch and building up, we started with a Fedora 6 and stripped it down. until we had a manageable image that would fit in memory on most computers.
How much memory is that?
I think now we're down to what, maybe?
The actual size is 25 meg, I believe.
Wow.
And after expanding, it'll probably be about 50. So it should run on the 128 meg, 256 meg memory.
Yeah, the kernel, it's not that big. It's just a few megabytes, right?
I think the kernel we ship is maybe 3 or 4 meg.
Right. So you actually have a pretty complete distro. If you've got, that sounds like you got a lot more stuff going on.
Yeah.
So I don't understand the architecture. Is that booting initially on these machines that will eventually load a Windows image on it?
Yeah, the way it kind of works is when you use Fog, every computer in your network is typically set to Pixie boot. And then what that does is it talks to the Fog server, and it'll bring up a menu on the client machine where you could do certain tasks, if you like registering the machine, where you can... What that'll do is add it to the Fog database,
there's a memory test, and we can do like a wipe up the drives. If it is a machine you don't need anymore, you want to wipe that drive clean, we can do that.
How does that Pixie boot get installed in the first place?
So I like Pixie boot. I just want Pixie boot.
Pixie boot is a network boot.
Network boot. Okay.
Yeah. So basically, you're on the machine BIOS, you configure the first boot device, becomes your network boot.
And it loads Pixie off a network drive.
Yeah. When the machine boots up and the machine will go look at the Pixie based on your DHCP setting, it will look at the DHCP's of the Pixie server. If there's a task layer for your MAC address, it will pick it up and we do, based on the task, the kernel will figure out when it be done and if it didn't be image or maybe we inventory the machine.
So from a clean machine, all you need to start with is first tell it to do a net boot, and after that, this will take it from there.
Yeah, if you have a machine, you know, say it's like for high school, say we bought a 30 computer, You take the first computer, you create an image the way you want it for that 30 machine.
Right.
Then you up that image to the server. Then all you do is unbox the machine from the box and turn it on, set it to the network boot. When it's booting up, you pick up the job from the server. You will figure out what needs to be done. And then just image the machine.
That's so cool.
Yeah, once after image the machine, you would change the host name and base the host name you put in. And it would install printer or any missing software based on the based on the Falk database.
If I have multiple images, say I have one for HP's and one for IBM's, is there a way to select? Can I go to the Pixie and they'll say, okay, which one do you want?
Actually, don't need to. It's a from the Falk management, it's web based management. You tell the machine what image you want, and you tell machine what you've done. And then when that machine boots up, if IBM machine boots up, you figure out there's an image that needs to be done. It will pull that image down, and the image of the machine then do the regular thing.
So it's completely automated. It's completely unintended.
Yeah. We try to do is not have use the technician visit that machine.
Right.
If they don't have to.
No sneaker net.
Yeah.
Well, that certainly makes sense, especially like in a business situation. You'd want to be able to have somebody just ship a box to their desk and they just boot it up and it just works.
That's where I first learned about Ghost. I think it was at Ziff Davis when, you have an IT department, you've got 100 seats, new machines coming in all the time. They don't want to have to install Windows every time. So they don't.
Is this thing only phoning home at boot time then, or is it also a daemon running in the background somewhere that can monitor for an updated release?
There's a Windows service that runs in Windows once the computer's up to Windows that does call home to the server, and it is a polling architecture. So it will query the server every, I believe it's roughly 5 minutes, and pull new tasks, new printers, new snap-ins, things of that nature.
But you could also have it do a complete new image. Like it could actually reboot and then go through the netboot process again, right?
Yep. The way the service works is it's kind of modular. There's like a module that does host name changing, one that does snap-ins. And what you're talking about is there's basically one for when it sees a task on the server, it'll restart, it'll boot Pixie again, and then it'll either pull an image or send an image down to that machine based on what you tell it to do via the management front end.
Wow. Cool. So this really could be unattended management for hundreds of machines from one central server then.
Yep. That's what we try to make it.
Is it one big bash shell? What did you write this in?
The web front end is mostly PHP. And there is, just a lot of bash scripting that we ended up doing for a lot of the actual core imaging process. There's a little bit of C thrown in there, and I think that's about it.
What a job, man.
I saw some Java in there. Did you write the Java, or is that for some of the pieces of it?
That is actually a component for the SSH. We only modified that. We actually took the core of that from another open source project, and the name of that escapes me. The Java, it's basically a remote SSH shell.
It's all in the license. It's all in the license. Don't worry about it. You got a license with it. Read the license.
Well, this is all GPL v3, right?
That's this is why this is so beautiful. Why open source is so awesome. You could cobble something like this together with bits and pieces from a lot of different projects. You don't have to rewrite your SSH implementation. It's already there.
So what's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
What's the PHP for? Is that the configuration console then for the central server?
Yeah, the PHP is all the web interface. And that's where most of the interaction with Fog is done is via the web interface. So you basically fire up a web browser, and then you do all your management from there. That's where you end up defining your images. You can modify information on all your hosts, which are the client computers that you end up imaging. That's all done through the PHP web-based front end.
And that's running on, inside Apache on your Linux box then?
Yep.
How many systems... I probably should say it in terms of how many reboots per hour or something can a machine... Well, because if the system's up 24/7, there's no interaction. So I'm just saying, how many new loads can a single Linux machine support? Is that a useful question?
On the current location where we're working at right now, we have about over 700 machines, and we have one server, and we don't see any problem with it.
Wow.
Yeah, the load is very low. You don't see CPU or anything really spike. You see disk IO go up if you're actually imaging, but It's really low overhead.
Now, it sounds like you've done this for enterprise, but if an individual wants to use Fog to make images of his hard drive for backup purposes, can it be used that way too? Do you have to have a client server environment?
Yeah, that's what we really specialize in. That's kind of what differentiates us from other just tools out there, is we really kind of focus more on the enterprise where it's client right. server based, and we try to make that easy to set up and install. Now, so for the home user, it may be a little bit of overkill.
Yeah. But I guess now could I work with a NAS? Could a NAS have all the images and run the software? Or
it could.
That would be kind of a cool thing to do if you had a NAS, and anytime somebody plugged in a new system, it just said, "Oh, hey, hello, new system."
actually, there's a plug-in for a Kubuntu on there, and there's a repair shop actually using that. Based on when you plug your laptop into the network, and the Pixie boots up, it will read the BIOS information and find out what kind of model is it, and then we pull the model based on that model. You will pull the image down and re-image that machine.
Nice and smart. I have to say, I like that. It sounds like you guys were scratching your own itch here, though, that you were writing software that you were using yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And then we saw that other people could use it, because licenses for like Semantic Ghost can be quite expensive when you get up into the thousands of computer range.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, cool.
This is neat. What do you, you say that's PHP. What made you choose PHP?
It was just kind of my language of choice when I started. And actually, that's probably one of the things we were looking to do, is kind of update the PHP. It's very procedurally written right now. It could probably be written more object-orientated, but it was just kind of what we started with, and it was kind of my language of a choice when we started. There was really no defining feature that PHP offered that made us choose it.
How did you do other web development before that then?
Yeah, a little bit here and there.
I suppose it's probably impossible to get through school these days without having done some web dev, though. So I suppose that's probably a stupid question.
Even if you have to do a web page for your open source project, if nothing else. Right?
So what was the hardest part of putting this all together?
You know, the hardest part of just running this project in general, I would say, is probably publicity, because open source projects really don't have a budget for advertising or anything like that. So you kind of rely on word of mouth for word to spread about your project. That's probably the toughest thing, the biggest hurdle I would say we have to get over.
What about technical hurdles, though? I mean, is there any part of this that was particularly perplexing to you until you finally went, aha, and solved it?
The biggest one we got is the Vista. The Vista changed the way they're doing the MBR. So we have a lot of problems to figure out how we're going to modify. Because the image we can resize. When you pull the image up, when you say your image is on 80 gig hard drive, you can pull the image up and resize it to a 200 gig hard drive. Mm-hmm. The problem with Vista is very hard, because they really change the booting order. So that was the biggest challenge we have.
Have you had a chance to play with the new Windows 7 to see if it is even harder or easier?
We look at it. Let's run on the Windows 7, the new one. We just downloaded the beta. They actually have a hidden 200 meg partition on there. So we have to try to figure out how to preserve that 200 gig and make it resizable on a second partition.
Mm. But it's a beta. Do you think that's how it'll do it in the release version? I guess you're just always kind of guessing when you have Microsoft.
Yep.
We hope they don't change anything.
Yeah. You just don't know, do you?
I mean, well, it's another half a year before they release.
Who would have thought they'd change the master boot record?
So when the image is coming across from the server, is that in some sort of SSL protocol? Is it like with an SSH client? Or, I mean, what keeps somebody else from like spoofing that they're the host on this thing?
Well, right now we basically upload it to an NFS server, and it's all done through NFS ACLs. We're in the process of actually adding SSH support so that we can do things like that. Right now there's not a whole lot protecting someone else from uploading to the NFS server, other than the fact that we upload to a temporary directory that gets wiped clean every so often. So images are only up to a temporary location. Then when the imaging task is done, we move them to a permanent location.
Because I was thinking, you know, since these things are net booting, what's to stop somebody from, saying, wait, I'm the net boot server real quickly when it's first waking up. How do you control that the net boot server has to be locked into a particular real server?
But on the imaging machine, image only can down through the management. Management right. has to set up a task for you to pull in. If you don't have an image management tell you to pull the task, you just use default. The default usually just go boot right to the local drive.
I'm thinking even earlier than that, though. I mean, when the system is first waking up, it goes, who is my NetBoot?
Who am I? What am I doing here?
Yeah.
Who would like to tell me what to do?
That can that can chose by your DHCP server. It's a
So your router can be in charge of that one.
Yeah, your DHCP scope is in charge of it, tell you what to do on that scope.
Yeah, for example, For example, on Linux, there's a setting that you set called next server, which points to the your TFTP server. And that's basically how it's controlled on Linux, and Windows has a very similar option like that. Is that what you were looking for, or were you talking even earlier than that?
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, so Pixie wakes up, I guess, and it says, I need to go find where my brains are.
Yep.
Right. So can that be locked down to a specific IP?
Yeah, it could be spoofed if you put up another DHCP server, because then that because basically when you get the address from the DHCP server, it also gives you that additional information, the next server address.
Right.
So there are ways that it could be compromised, and the easiest way would probably be putting up just another DHCP server, and that's kind of hard to restrict.
I'm just thinking of this because you're talking about using this in school environments, and I can just see that if everybody's rebooting their NetBoot system every morning, you know, I could come along and flash my own system onto their box.
Yep, and put a malicious. Yep, it is possible.
Okay, see, I'm a security guy. So that's where I'm always thinking. I'm always
going, well, and you know, high school kids, you know, high school hackers, and you know what they try to do. Sure, you probably were one of them, Randall.
I'm not. It is past statute of limitations now, isn't it?
Yeah, you can admit it now.
Let's just say I had my days. I had my days back then. Yes, it's true. Yeah. I was more clever and dangerous than I am now. Yes. Now I just talk about it.
and you raise a good point, because it's, of course, much more than high schools that would use this in theory. I mean, it's a great idea. It's probably something that Norton Ghost has a similar issue with. I mean, it's a more fundamental issue than...
Yeah, when you do any Pixie booting like that, it is
always
something that's very problematic. Yeah.
Pixie is PXE, and it is a standard, right?
Yes.
We should get Steve Gibson to do a show about Pixie security.
Pixie hacking.
Yeah. There we go. How to avoid it? I mean, not how to do it.
Do all PCs now support Pixie in the BIOS?
All recent PCs do. We've come across very few that don't support it. And if they don't, you can actually create a CD, a bootable CD that kind of emulates the Pixie BIOS and does the whole process for you.
That's a good idea. So you'll know if you have Wake on LAN on your computer, that's usually Pixie, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Good thing to know.
And so the PHP code, you said it's large and sort of ugly. My word, ugly. You said it was could be used a bit more modular. Do you have tests and stuff for it? Is it test-driven development, or you just make sure you don't put any bugs in the first place?
We do. We do have some testing we do, but it's hard to test do a full regression test on it every single time. But, yeah, we do have standard tests that we check for.
And you're a development environment? You're using VI or Emacs or something?
I'm a gedit guy.
Gedit, all right.
Gedit? That's, I think, the first person who's ever said that, actually. Jin, do you use gedit too?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, a whole world is opening to me now. I could finally admit I use Pico. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm a young and I'm a GUI guy.
A GUI guy. Wow. Gedit.
So what's the startup time with this? I mean, if I was an administrator for, you know, 20 systems, and I've been using, you know, the commercial products before that, I wanted to just switch over to using this. What's like the time between, say, pushing the button for the download, the time I could probably boot all my machines on this?
We can do a base XP install with no additional software in under a minute.
But I mean, how long before I understand how to set up the system to do that?
Oh,
Randall's slower than the average computer, so you know.
As in, how good is documentation? What's the support like? Is there IRC channels for people to ask questions or mailing lists? What's the support structure behind this look like?
We do a lot of forum-based support. We have a pretty extensive wiki that has, if you print out the document, it's over, I believe, 70 pages now. That's just general user documentation. We have a bug tracker on SourceForge. And we do actually have some Flash movies, too, to help you get up and running. Mm. So you can visually walk through it with the videos. But if you're wanting to experiment with Fog, you could easily get it up and running in a half a day or a day and feel relatively comfortable, I would say, with it.
So you must have a big team of documentation people and a lot of people working with you on that kind of stuff, or you do it all yourself?
Oh, it's all me and Jim.
You're kidding.
I shouldn't say that. Our wiki page is editable by the user community, and there has been a lot of great contributions from the community to the wiki to make it more extensive and kind of clarify where me or Jim kind of leave information out.
Mm. Wow, so I'm impressed. This is. Are you looking for help?
Oh, always.
Always.
Are you looking for coders? Would the coders need to know something like PHP then, or Bash?
Yeah, PHP, Bash. We're looking for people to do anything. If you know how to compile a kernel, we could use you. If you're good at documentation, we could use you.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for anyone.
and you go ahead.
So do you have a pretty large community then? Do you have any idea how many installations you have?
We estimate about 600 active sites use Fog on a daily or semi-daily basis.
Wow.
That's neat. That's really neat.
Yeah. Incredible.
Makes you wish you charged for it, doesn't it?
We wouldn't be here, though, on the show.
You'd have to be on some other show.
And hopefully, as a result of a few people listening to this, we'd have 601, 602, 603. Yeah. So.
Well, and, yeah, absolutely. Maybe somebody, do you guys, are you gainfully employed? Were you looking for work? Are the high school paying you okay?
Oh, they treat us pretty well. Good. We can't complain.
Are they aware that you're doing this, and are they supporting your open source efforts?
They're aware that we're doing it, but most of this is done on off work hours, right. So they kind of stay independent of it.
It's not like Sun, where they're giving you a special office and a secretary. No. Yeah,
you don't have one of those wacky employment agreements that requires that everything you do, even off hours, belongs to the school.
No,
no.
Thank God.
Sure. Don't give them any ideas, Randall.
They both say this enthusiastically. I like that. That's great. No way we'd sign one of those.
Don't sign that contract. No.
Do you have to eat in the high school cafeteria?
No.
No.
I did it for 4 years when I was a student. So once I started working for the district, I said
great.
No more.
Isn't that great?
Just checking.
Checking, Jen. It's really great to talk to you, and it's just great. To have a program like this. Now, are there people taking this and maybe making a desktop version of it? I think that'd be an interesting project.
Are you talking about a desktop for
like
an
end user?
Windows?
Yeah, somebody like me, not in Windows, but I would love to be able to do this, on my own systems.
See, we kind of left that for. There's other programs out there that may be more suited for that, such as like CloneZilla and the alike. So we just tried to fill the niche of more of the enterprise crowd.
Yeah, cool. Hmm. Well, I hear somebody told me that enterprise open source is the next big thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Larry Augustin, actually. Yeah. Great to talk to you, Chuck and Jen. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Fog is at fogproject.org.
Mm-hmm.
And you can download it there and install it. And if you've got a Pixie-aware BIOS, you're ready to go ready. And a server, you're ready to run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who doesn't these days? Thanks, guys. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Bye. Great to talk to you. Thanks for contacting us so we could get you on the show. That's really cool. I love it that people are calling us now.
Oh, yeah. It makes my job that much easier, and I already have a pretty crazy job as it begins. It's really cool. I'm still getting, and I appreciate this. Thank you, guys. I'm getting probably 5 to 10 to sometimes 15 emails in a day just with suggestions for the list, just for updates to the list. Very cool. And again, I have to repeat this a couple more times before it finally sinks in. If you're just suggesting a project name, I have plenty of those. What I'm looking for are specific contacts, specific people, email addresses, and even more ideal, if you are a leader of an open source project that you think we should talk to, please send it off to me. You can find that contact information at twit.tv/floss. You'll find the link there to the upcoming shows. You'll find my email address as well there, which will give you connections there. And speaking of which, Leo, you're interested in who's coming up?
I will always be interested in who's coming up.
Very good. Well, next week we have Quim Gill calling to us from Finland. That's where Nokia is, right?
Yeah.
Finland? Yeah. Yeah. Calling to us from Finland, talking to us about MAMO, which is the open source operating system for the Nokia tablet.
I've been having my Nokia N800 has been sitting here for weeks waiting for MAMO. I want to talk about MAMO.
Exactly. So that should be a really good show. Looking forward to that. I'll have to actually do some research to figure out what the heck that's all about.
We should send you the 800 so you could play with MAMO.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah.
I need one more thing to distract my day. But and immediately following that, we have John Rezik of jQuery, which should be really interesting. That's a JavaScript application library, sort of like what we did with the UE last year, the Yahoo User Interface Library. jQuery is sort of in that same realm of being able to cross-platform, create dynamic displays on your browser. I also understand that he did, and I found this out just recently, a JavaScript version of processing. So we're just going to collide these two shows here for that part, which should be interesting. So looking forward to that conversation as well. We have coming up after that, David Gisnell, Quentin Mathy of the Etoile Project, which is essentially an open source OS X. It sits on top of OpenStep, which we talked to 6 months ago, I think it was. And so Etoile is a nice user interface layer on top of that. Gives you your sort of user interface layers that OpenStep wasn't quite doing. After that, Jonathan Marshall, Scott Davila on XBMC, the media player, originally for Xbox media player, right?
Ooh, I like that. I'm using a Boxy a lot, which is based on XBMC.
Based on XBMC up. We also have Aaron Newcomb and David Brittle talking to us from Sun about the ZFS file system, which should be really neat.
Fun.
We have Isaac Clarencia about eBox, which is 500,000 lines of Perl code to provision boxes in racks for applications, which should be pretty interesting. To I am looking forward to finding out how he's actually managing that. So that should be really
good. As soon as somebody writes a one-liner for that, that's when I'll get excited.
Mm-hmm. And on the short list, I have we've got the guys that are working on Wubby.
That's really cool.
Windows installer underneath or something, right?
Wubby lets you install Linux on Windows without partitioning, without any. It's just right in it. It's really cool.
Got him coming up soon, and also a couple others in the short list, but we'll leave them for future shows. I think it's probably enough, but that's about 6 or 7 weeks out. So
you don't want to wet too many whistles.
I know, exactly. But like I said, having fun doing this show, having fun talking to all these people, getting it all lined up, and people stepping forward doing that. We also got the Arduino people, too. I've emailed them a couple times trying to make that to happen, so that should be coming up soon as well, since we talked about Arduino on the processing show a couple weeks
ago. Holy cow, you are just a busy little beaver.
Indeed. And I do have a cruise coming up in 6 weeks. There'll be a slight gap in the shows here, but I should be right back on strategy right after that. So
a gap in the shows,
I'm so sorry. Unless, Leo, you want to take more of your busy schedule and do a few extras.
Well, we could do that. Hey, you know, that's not a bad idea.
Well, it's all
we'll double record before you go. That's a great idea.
Do that for sure. No problem with that at all. So maybe we'll all.
When is the cruise again?
Cruise is the end of February.
And how many weeks?
Well, it's a week. It's 10-day cruise, and so I'll be offline for probably 2 weeks.
Two Wednesdays, so we just have to double up the two Wednesdays before.
Exactly.
Easy. Very peasy.
Cool. Very cool.
So you book them. I'll record them.
Very good. All right. Very good.
Well, and the arm is feeling better?
It's getting there. I'm holding the pint glass, if that's any kind of label.
That's
all
that matters.
You know, I can pick up a pint glass in my left hand full of my favorite beverage and bring it right to my lips and go, So I still don't have, I'm gaining about 1 degree a day in terms of wrist rotation. And I still got another 20 degrees to go. So maybe by the end of the month, end of February, I'll be back to almost normal. So we'll see how it works.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good. Well, Randall, as always, a great pleasure. Thank you for getting the Fog Boys on, and we'll talk again next week on Floss Weekly.